I just want to talk about something quickly. Dude, nightclubs, it's over, hey. Nightclubs are done, hey.
Who it's goes finished. To nightclubs?
Yeah, look, I had a friend going away. He's off to Japan. Shout out to Aaron. If you listen to the pod, hope you're having fun in Japan or
whatever.
Or you might actually be flying the day this comes out. But yeah, I had going away. So I think it's chilled, you know, watching the basketball at a friend's house, you know, just having drinks, you know, a bit of beer pong, bit of poker. Anyway, all of a sudden these boys are like, oh, we have to go out one last time. Let's just go. It'll be quick. Kanye, you never come out. Come hang out with us.
Have a shot.
And they took me to a night, mate, nightclubs. It's over. It's a wrap. Dude, I was in this so nightclub. Done. And I know, have you know you've been in a nightclub and they're playing the music like, you know, they're playing one of those, you know, one of those classical nightclub songs, like, give me everything tonight. And then the beat drops and then they spray that shit. I don't know what it is. It's not a smoke screen though.
Do they still do cold, that?
It's like cold smoke air.
Oh my, it's my, I don't know. You can't see anyone.
Yeah, what is that thing?
Who is that for?
When did that start happening? Because it got to points in the night where I just start ducking that thing.
Why don't I want less was like, visibility in the situation?
Yeah, it was hurting my face though. It's like, do you know what I'm talking about though when they spray that stuff?
Like yeah, when
the
beat drops
and
stuff exactly
and the DJ's kind of ending a set. Like, why is that there? Why are we just getting sprayed with stuff?
Don't know. Don't know why that's a thing. It's so, you know what it is? Also, when you go into a nightclub, and I mean, like, I'm single, so different situation for you, you know? But as soon as I walk into a nightclub and all my other mates are like, oh, dude, go talk to that girl. Like, she's so pretty. I'm like, no, I can't. I'm short. And that, and then like, what do you mean? It's like, girls do not hook up with short guys in the nightclub. It's not a thing. They really? See the tall thing. They see the tall guy, and regardless of whether of looks or whatever, girls only see tall people in nightclubs. It's a thing. I look like a child, like running around.
Oh, I didn't. Well, actually, I will say, I was noticing the taller people at the nightclub.
I think it's because they're hunting ground. Like, that's where tall people.
Because they're just tall in a crowd. And then they're sitting there dancing in their little circle with all their friends, holding, you know, live beer.
There's so much invitation for comparison there, right? If I'm dancing there, and then the next guy's like this, the girl's like, oh, that guy, that's the one.
Yeah.
You know, so
I can see it. One's bigger than the other. I'll take that one. Yes,
yeah, that's exactly. I can imagine we could just compare like wallets on the dance floor. They'd be like, oh, no, that one. You know, like
just take the bigger one.
You're like, yeah, that one over there. You know, like, why would I go for that one? What's your biggest take from the nightclub? What's the thing you hate the most?
Yeah, it's just a wrap. Like the DJs, like, you know, the music's kind of good. It's good to kind of like see some mates, you know, bump into some people from work, like, yay! But it's a wrap, dude. I looked at the time. I was shocked at the time. I was like, what am I doing with the public at this ungodly hour when demons start coming through the woodwork? I was out during demon time. Vampire hours.
Demon time.
Yeah, I mean, look, I feel for you single people. Like, it's rough out there.
Yeah, it's tough. It's rough. But I think also it's our age, right? We're 30 now. Do we still enjoy nightclubs at 30? I don't think we're even supposed to.
No, yeah. And these guys are a bit younger than me as well. So, like, for them, it's a kick to get me out to the nightclub. Because all the guys who are, like, in their 30s, long-term relationships, we all kind of, like, left fairly early. You know? We're just like, wait, why am I? Hold on, how much? What, I have to line up to pee? Oh, I'm out. I'll see you guys later.
Do you know what's my worst thing about nightclubs? Is that you, as a single person, it's like hope. You go like, maybe if I go to this side of the club, I'll meet the girl who also wants to have relations with me. You know, like I'll meet a girl who's attractive
She'll
enough.
She'll be there.
She'll be over. So you go to different parts of the nightclub. Like you do a journey. You do like I'll come back. I'm going on an adventure. And then you start going to like different parts of the nightclub. You go to the smoking section and you like look around like, can I borrow a lighter from someone? Is there someone I can talk to? You're like, no one here. So you go to like the couch section and you try and like scoot up.
Yeah, look, good luck to you guys. Because yeah, for me, it was me and the boys just rapping Drake like word for word. That was kind of my night.
That sounds like fun.
I never see you. We should catch up. We won't catch up. There's a lot of that.
The pedestal.
The pedestal.
The pedestal.
I don't know.
Bonjour. Bonjour, Kanizu. Ça va?
Excuse me?
I thought this is the Starting in French should be the best way to start this podcast, considering the considering what we're going to be speaking about today. It might be a good idea.
See, I don't want to attempt that because I at the risk of potentially being offensive to someone. So I'm gonna let you have that. You hold that down. So yeah, teach us more in French, please.
So what we can talk about? No, I can't do a French accent. So I mean, why I wanted to start off in French today?
Yeah.
Why I want to start off in French today is because we're going to be talking about a coup d'état. A coup d'état, which has become a very important... No, I can't do it. It's a very important thing in the news at the moment in terms of what's going on in the world, and especially when it comes to West Africa and the Sahel region.
Yeah, so tell me about that. Why either I'm becoming more informed because I'm reading the news more, but why does it seem like that's being more of an issue recently, or at least it's being reported on more than I kind of historically would have thought?
Well, Kanye, there's a long history to explain why this is becoming more and more important, but I'll give you the short answers first, right? We'll go through the bullet points. So essentially, okay, first of all, what is a coup? A coup is when a military insurgency within a country overthrows a current or democratically elected government, right? So where is this happening at the moment? So we got Mali, Burkina Faso, Niger, Gabon, and there's another one that I'm forgetting right now. But these are all former French colonies within the West African region. And what's become quite important now is that these coups have taken over. They're speaking a lot about anti-imperialist tendencies, and they are cutting off resources from their former colonizer, the French, as well as the United States. So, for example, obviously we spoke about there's been coups happening for like the last month, right? The last few months. But the really big one was now Gabon, because Gabon was said to be quite a stable country in a lot of ways. But they had the Bongos, the father and the son, have been ruling Gabon for like the last 60 years. And a big issue, I think this is why this is quite a big one, because it's had a lot of backlash across the board from the East and the West. So Gabon has oil. They have like, they produce quite a bit of oil, but not enough to like really shake the oil price on a global scale. But what they
an OPEC member.
Sure. Okay. Sure. But what they do make is 20% of the world's magnesium. They export 20% of the world's magnesium. So that can shake the market, right? If you need to buy magnesium, a lot of it is coming from Gabon. So that's why this particular one has had such a backlash from the rest of the world.
Right. So with coups, just so I understand this, you're saying it's where a military force just comes in and takes over the country. These coups are quite interesting to me because I'm still trying to understand this conceptually. So is it kind of like a, how do I say this? Like, is it like a surprise party? But instead of like, you know, ice cream and birthday cakes, it's soldiers and tanks.
Very similar, you know? So for example, in the Gabonese example, Bongo had just recently won the elections. Won the elections in very, very big inverted commas. And he was hey guys.
You're not insinuating he stole the election, are you?
Well, he allowed no media, no foreign press, and basically shut down the country during the election. So it's not like they could be monitored by anyone else in that regard. His family's also been in power for the last 50 years. So you would think there might be something dodgy going on in that regard. But in that situation, he just won the elections and was like, hey guys, I won. Let's have a party. And then the army was like, no, not a party. Party for us, not a party for you. You're going under house arrest. What's quite funny is the guy who led the coup was not only his personal bodyguard, but apparently his cousin as well. It's very Shakespearean in a lot of ways.
Oh, right. Okay. Oh, so it's just Game of Thrones.
It's a bit Game of Thrones.
Game of Thrones in Africa. That's all that's really going down, right?
Yeah, basically. Basically, yeah.
Just cousins being like, look, I think I can run this entire country better than you can. So we're taking over. And what interesting in Gabon is that wasn't really a revolution, was it? It was more just kind of the higher-ups kind of shifting, right? There wasn't really a revolution kind of occurring. He just kind of got tapped on the shoulder about all his mates and got told, hey, you're done.
It depends how you look at it, right? So Gabon, okay, so let's put into perspective. So we can talk about coups and like on a far more sort of grander level in a bit. But from a Gabonese perspective, this ruling power had been there for like 50 years, very close ties to France, massive oil reserves, huge manganese reserves. It's a population of 2 million people, but still one of the poorest nations in the world. So it's not like with 2 million people, you could put them all into school and university and build houses for everyone and hospitals for that amount of people in like a year, but nothing was done. You know, this is like a perpetually underfunded and under-resourced country, even though they're essentially per capita one of like the wealthiest nations in the world. So if you put those two together, close connections to France extracting the resources constantly, and now suddenly them saying, no longer, we're going to take over and we're going to put you under house arrest, you could say is a quite revolutionary in a lot of ways, as opposed to just being like, oh no, the army's just taking over because they feel like they just want the power. It's now like, no, we need to step in here. Otherwise, these guys are going to carry on ruling and we're not going to be able to get that funding down to the people that really need it.
Right. And it's quite interesting because with the other coups, I think particularly Niger, Burkina Faso, it seemed like those were more kind of based around the leaders of that time not really being able to protect the country when it comes to sort of your insurgencies, you know, your Al-Qaeda, Islamic State. Is that something similar that's happening in Gabon? Or would you say, although there's many coups happening, they're kind of all happening for different reasons?
I don't want to answer your question with like an hour long answer, because essentially I could. But I think what's happened is, we had like an Arab Spring, right? Where we had a bunch of coups, a bunch of revolutions when it came to North Africa and the Middle East. And that
we call it Arab Spring?
That was the official term. I think on Twitter,
a bunch of coups. They called it Spring.
I have to look into why they called it that. I'm not sure why they called it the Arab Spring. I'm actually not even entirely sure.
No, I know it's called Arab Spring. It feels weird when you think about what it's about. I thought it was just kind of like the rising of Arab like nations, but I forgot it's about millions of people dying in wars.
Yeah, no, it's a big deal, obviously. But you had the Arab Spring, and like, coups are kind of contagious in a lot of ways, right? Because some people, they see that the next country is doing it. They see what's happening on social media and they go, listen, we actually don't want this to happen either. And a huge thing what's happened in West Africa and the Sahel region is a lot of these countries that were under the boot of the French still, you know, their former colonizer for so long. Once the first one happened, then the next one happened. And then the next one happened. And then when ECOWAS, which is like the alliance of the region, right, of West Africa, ECOWAS said, listen, guys, put the Nigerian president back into power, otherwise we're going to invade. And Nigeria was a big part of that. But then all those countries that had recently had coups and revolutions said, no, we're going to stand together. And that's quite important, right? Because if it was just one of them, then they could be pressured into then putting things back into place. But in this circumstance, because there were so many of them and reasonably powerful militaries in the context of that area, they couldn't, you know. So it stood fast and it's still going on. And to be fair, they do share very similar ideologies in terms of like anti-West. We're going to side with Russia in a lot of ways. We want France to get out. The guy, Ismaël Traoré in Burkina Faso, he's talking a lot about Thomas Sankara's ideology, who was a former revolutionary in Burkina Faso. He was actually killed off by his mate, and I don't know if this is true or not, but by the French. And he's saying, no more champagne for the few and no drinking water for the many. We want drinking water for the many. And that's an idea that's kind of caught on in that area.
Right. So we obviously understand why or how France benefited through these African countries, whether it was through, you know, maintaining strong relationships with leaders or signing favorable deals with businesses and extracting natural resources. How do we kind of see Russia's benefit? So definitely understand you have sort of Wagner Group and, you know, making money off the ability to build sophistication within these military groups and, you know, organize them, arm them to kind of overthrow, you know, police or state governments. But what's Russia's actual benefit to helping these countries? How does it benefit? Is it going to essentially just take over all the current deals that France has and then structure in a way that's beneficial for them? I'm still not seeing that play clearly. Like, I hear it on the news. I hear like, oh, these guys are pro-Russia. This is a pro-Russia, you know, coup happening. But where's the money? Like, where's the real benefit happening?
Where's the money? Show me the money.
Like, I'm still trying to see where's the money, because it all comes down to money. Resources and money, right?
100%. I think it's a really good question, because what we have seen, right, in these regions, it's an anti-West sentiment. And no one really embodies that more than Russia, especially currently. So if we look at it, they go, well, who benefited us during colonialism? And post? The Russians, right? They were quite helpful in a lot of ways. They also see as, you know, Putin is like a big strong man. I think that's really important for those regions as well. But I think it predominantly comes down to let's have influence. We want to have influence in every region of the world. And a big way they can do that is by supporting these coup leaders. And to be fair, I can't substantiate how they are helping them. I know that they had like a big conference in Russia where a lot of, I know, for example, in Russia, Tororo went out there. I think a few other coup leaders went out there. So there's obviously some connection that Russia's trying to make there, and but maybe it's more of a ploy for resources than anything else. But to be fair, most of them have oil, and Russia's got oil. So, but maybe you can't have too much. I don't know.
Yeah, I guess if I had to be a guessing man, I guess that it would make sense in terms of influence, having influence on, you know, raw commodities such as oil, gas, uranium, particularly in Nigeria, and maybe putting Russia in those favorable positions to, you know, either, you know, fuel the war or making sure that the rest of the world can't kind of just strong arm Russia when it comes to any kind of resources. You know, if everyone doesn't listen, all of a sudden it doesn't matter what you say, you know, in terms of we're imposing sanctions or we're not going to let you do business. Maybe we just create our own market. So yeah, that could make sense from a Russian perspective, right?
I think that makes a lot of sense. I mean, it actually links back to last week's episode, right? The BRICS forming their own way. They want to be able to be sufficient without the West. And then if their resources in that area and if they've got influence in that area, that might help them, you know, foster more of that kind of influence.
Yeah, and I think a question that a lot of people could be asking themselves right now is, why should I care, Nick? I'm living in X country. Things are going well for me, or, you know, might not be going well for me, but why should I care about these coups in Africa? Like, why is this news? Is it just purely, oh, this tragedy is happening in an unfortunate place to unfortunate people? Or does the world and everyone around, like everyone in it, need to kind of be paying more attention to what's happening in Africa? And yeah, kind of why? What do you think?
Okay, so I think it's a symptom of the world changing, really. I think it's an inevitable backlash to constant, how do you say, it's an anti-colonial backlash that should have happened probably like 20, 30 years ago. So if I were to put it in a nutshell, basically you have like the French, the British, and the Belgians go into West Africa, right? And they go in there and they do horrible things there. They do forced forced labor. They cut people's arms off for stealing an apple. They do terrible things out there, right? And this happens during colonialism. And the entire time, it's a very extractionary relationship as opposed to a symbiotic relationship. We're all aware of that. Cool. So then this ends, right? So colonialism ends, but the land still stays within, it still belongs to the corporations or the government of France or from American corporation or whatever that might be. So the people don't get that land back. It stays with those companies. So still there's this extractionary relationship, right? So these essentially by the resources underneath the grounds of the people that live there would make them the wealthiest people in the world. But because they don't control their own resources, they are still very poor, and they like this huge infant mortality rates and poverty in general in these areas. So we have coups there, you know, once a decade in a lot of regions, basically. But every single time it gets stamped out and it gets pushed down. So I think this is always going to happen. And why people should care is that now finally a lot of regions are kind of waking up and they're like, we can't allow this to happen any longer. Because essentially also what happened was that the democracy was put in place, democracy in inverted commas. And the idea was that, I think the idea was, is that a large economies could still control those elections, right? So they could say, listen, we're going to fund this particular candidate. So it's almost
meant that there's still a math to democracy, yeah. There's still a math to democracy, isn't there?
Yeah, so if Nick and Kanye are running for election, and Kanye is the guy who should actually win the Burkina Faso election, but Nick is funded by the French and the Americans because they know that Nick is going to give way more favorable rights and have a way more favorable relationship with the West. They're going to fund that and they're going to win. So, for example, what happened to Bongo in Gabon. So in this situation, and I don't want to downplay this, and I don't want to sound like I'm not taking this seriously, but it's almost like these coups had to happen. It's almost like there's no way that people could take control of their own resources if the coups didn't happen. And I know that's controversial, and I know I'm gonna get hate, but if Traoré didn't take over Burkina Faso, would Burkina Faso ever see their own resources? I'm not sure.
Yeah. But I guess it comes to another point of, okay, you guys, here's all your land. We're gonna take all our business elsewhere, you know, whether it's Australian or American, because you know, to extract minerals, it does still take skills, right? There's a reason why we're not all just making semiconductors or processing lithium minerals, right? Certain countries have certain expertise and certain experiences. So there is that kind of, and I know this is the thing that happens with Australian businesses all the time, where they know that there's minerals in certain African countries, but they, you know, some of them go in there because they have strong relationships with the government and, you know, there's existing relationships and they know they can extract the minerals and, you know, things are somewhat stable. I guess Mali's is quite of an interesting one because I know a mining company that was meant to have a big deal happen in Mali, and all of a sudden the minister change and they were ringing the phone and the guys were like, who are you? Oh, you're trying to get this out the ground. How much did the other guy say? Oh, no, that's yesterday's price. We've got a whole new price. So I guess...
Yeah, no, sure. I hear you.
What I'm trying to say is here, okay, you have all your resources in your land, but now we're all leaving. So how... And the thing is, how do African countries, coming out of these coups, try maintain some sort of stability to the rest of the world that kind of goes, you know, Africa's open for business? Because I think that's the big issue Africa often struggles with. I mean, in Australia, they literally call it African risk. It's literally a coined phrase whenever you're investing risk in Africa. It's like, oh, you're taking in that African risk.
It's like, oh, in the description, when doing business in shithole countries, You have to take into consideration African risk. You have to take out African risk and insurance, just in case.
Well, you know, that's just, you know, your military coups, your, you know, the way you have to do business in Africa is not necessarily how it gets done in the rest of the world. Will that change as a result of these coups, or will it still be business as usual, but there's just another person who wants the same pie?
Okay, so you're the economist. So you'd probably be able to tell me better than...
I'm not an economist. Do not take any financial advice from me.
More economist-y than I am. But, okay. So it's a good question, right? So basically, so in Burkina Faso, for example, Traoré said, listen, guys, we don't sell to the West anymore. We don't sell to the States. We don't sell to the French. Anyone else who wants to come, you can come get our oil. But we don't sell to the French and the... and they got uranium as well, Niger's uranium, which is quite important.
Niger has a lot of uranium.
It lights up the whole of France. It's like 33% of France's uranium comes from Niger. But in the Traorin example, the Burkinabe example, they said we're not going to sell to France or the States anymore. But I mean, you tell me, right? Because you are the economist relatively in this conversation. If I sell oranges and you sell oranges, when you sell your oranges, you sell them for $10 an orange. But I sell my oranges, I sell them for $3 an orange. But I don't see any of those dollars. I sell them for $3, but then someone else takes the $3. Whereas when you sell the oranges, you sell them for $10. So less people want to buy the fucking oranges. They're expensive oranges. But if someone does buy the orange, you make that money. You put that money into your pocket. Whereas I never see the money. I sell them for cheap, but I don't get them either. Surely you would rather have your scenario where you're at least making some money, even if it's more expensive, from the oranges than me, where I'm selling them cheaper, but I never see the money.
And are you talking as Burkina Faso in this example?
That's in my mind how I see the scenario. As I'm not an expert on West African politics or their economies, but that's the way that I see the situation.
But I guess how hard is it for me to extract that $10? Or $3?
Well, I suppose it would cost you $3, but then it's more difficult, right? So there's all the other African risk factors that come into it.
So you then have to I might go walk in. Away. I'll go elsewhere. I mean, obviously, commerce is commerce, right? So guys will still take the risk to make the money. But yeah, there's this company at the moment, Leo Lithium, where they were meant to have, you know, a big announcement in terms of, I think it was lithium or gold. But yeah, with the Mali government kind of changing or having the coup, everything's just shut down. Everything's back to zero. So you basically have to re-agree all your prior terms. And if those terms don't make sense, you know, you might just walk away. And it would really depend, like, who's going to hurt more longer? Like, is Burkina Faso going to hurt? Or Niger? Or have they already been hurting? And it's like, look, things are bad as it is, so we'll take our risks. Or is France or the rest of the West going to start hurting in terms of, you know, prices for, you know, end user products or, you know, not having enough power? Like, capitalism has this weird way of, like, reworking itself. Because capitalists are, you know, the West's not greedy, but they're very opportunist.
They're nifty. They're a very nifty bunch.
It's interesting because, yeah, I am really interested to understand, you know, now that these countries are free, inverted commas, whatever that means for the period, will these coups result in, you know, democratic processes and, you know, more favorable commercial terms for their people? Or, you know, will it all just go back to normal? And I think a good example of this is Zimbabwe. Where, you know, Zimbabwe, you know, they... Would we say it was a coup or was it free and fair elections?
Okay, let's go back to your previous point because I think that's a very, very good point that you make, right? So from a Burkina Faso point of view, they did say within 2 years they'll hand back the power to the people. Obviously we don't know if that's true or not. But that's the idea. Yeah. So they're saying, listen, we're going to take over for a little bit and we're going to make sure everything's fine. And then we're going to bring democracy back to the country.
Mm.
We don't know what's going to happen. And I think that's what you could say for all of the region. We don't know what's going to happen in that region. They could all just take over and they could become fucking demagogues and we never see the end of them, right? It could be way worse than what we saw previously. And I think Zimbabwe is an amazing example because that's actually one of my favorite parts of history ever, is a Zimbabwean coup. Because apparently it was just like, it's a bloodless coup, right? I mean, you never get that. Yeah. And it's quite funny. Can I tell a quick story for the listeners. So apparently what happened was on the day of the coup in 2017 in Zimbabwe, the tanks start rolling down the road, the internet's shut down, people don't really know what's going on, and there's a bit of confusion about what's happening in the country. And then at 7 o'clock, when the news is supposed to come on, instead of like the pretty Zimbabwean woman who usually does the news, instead of her being there, is a very large man in full military dress. in full military dress. His name is Constantine Chiwenga, which if I was writing a book about a Zimbabwean coup, that would be his fucking name. You know, like a Roman emperor's name, Constantine Chiwenga. Oh, this is so good. Anyway. So now he's on the news. He's on the news sitting there in front of, instead of whoever that woman would have been, or that person, the newsreader would have been. And the first thing he says is, "Hi, everyone. This isn't a coup." "It's not a coup, everyone." So everyone's like, "Oh, well, it's obviously a coup." As soon as someone in full military outfit says, "Hey guys, it's not a coup," it's like, "Oh fuck! Well, we have a coup on our hands," which is quite interesting. Yes,
and it's interesting because Zimbabwe, I feel like it's just gone back to regularly scheduled programming, right? You even had the Al Jazeera investigation, Gold Mafia, and it was just corruption happening to no end.
So essentially what you had is Robert Mugabe goes out, Emmerson Mnangagwa comes in, and there's no real change. I mean, just in their recent elections, right? So ZANU-PF wins again, CCC contests, but Nelson Chamisa doesn't quite make it in, even though, as far as I understand, he did very well in the by-elections when it came to provincial elections. So, you don't really know what's happening in that situation. But as far as I understand, a lot of Zimbabweans didn't go back to vote, or they couldn't go back to vote, or whatever it might be. Who knows what would have happened, But in the Zimbabwean example, and I don't have the stats, so I know, and this is only an anecdotal fact that I've been told, so don't hold me to it. But apparently, farming output has been way better, So Zimbabwe, obviously, we know, agricultural soul of Africa. I don't know what people call it. Bread basket of Africa.
The bread of Africa.
Yes. So they are now back up to previous levels of agricultural output. And obviously the market grows and the economy grows and whatever that might be. But it does mean that there has been sort of functional change. And there's been a big thing about bringing back farmers. So Emmerson Mnangagwa said, "Hey guys, come back. You can take your land back. You can grow crops here. We kind of open for business." But we also know that we think he's corrupt. Not much has changed. There seems to be still a lot of rot within the ZANU-PF that would have been there previously. So it's in that regard, maybe hasn't changed as much as the average Zimbabwean would have wanted to change.
Yeah. And that's always what you worry about back home, right? As you get older, you always wonder, why is there this instinctual way that business gets done where very few people, a large amount of people really need the help. And if people spend more time doing things the right way, it would benefit more people. But for some reason, it's always based on doing the wrong thing that hurts the most people. Because essentially, the way Africa has been kind of left since, colonialism is, if you're in power in Africa, you almost have to be only doing the right thing at all costs. It's the only way it could actually work out for your people. But for some reason, it's just built into, it's almost in the soil, where guys in power will do compromising things at their benefit.
Isn't it such a massive coincidence? Such a huge coincidence that Africa has, Africa and South America and Southeast Asia and South Asia just happen to be not that good at running their countries as the West. Isn't it like just a little bit weird? Maybe there's a lot of interference going on. Who knows? I don't know. But I mean, I think let's say there's not, you know, let's say that previously colonized nations just aren't as good as running their nations as the colonizers and former European powers. And so that's just a massive coincidence. The example that we can take is Botswana. Botswana, in, you know, as coming up, weren't really colonized. They were like a protectorate of the British, and there wasn't that much sort of European interference as they were developing. And you know, so they kind of take over, they run themselves, they've got great court systems, they've got great sort of governance systems, and then they find diamonds, right? They find diamonds while they're a republic, while they're sovereign. And Karma, very smart guy, says, listen, is it Anglo Gold or was it the other one? One of the large mining firms.
De Beers.
They say, listen, you can come, it was a De Beers. So De Beers, you can come in, but 50% of everything that you make must go to the state.
Yes.
50%, everything you mine here, one of the largest diamond deposits in the entire world, has to go to the state. And when that happened, it wasn't like an Angolan situation where people just put the money into their pockets. They took that money and they put it into education, they put it into healthcare, and they could develop their country, right? So it means Botswana now sits as like a middle income country, which means that like a certain amount of people earn a certain amount of money that allows them to buy enough food every month, and then their kids go to university and high school for free. If you as a Zimbabwean, so as a Botswanan, want to go overseas to study a master's, the Botswanan government will pay for you to do that as long as you come back and use those expertise in Botswana. To having a free healthcare system, that's really important. And we are talking about a very sparse nation, right? It's a sparsely populated nation. It's a very small nation, but using their resources in a way that can develop their people as opposed to something else. So that's why the Gabonese example is so frustrating. Because they've got so much manganese, because they've got oil deposits, and yet they're like a population of 2 million people, why isn't the same situation? Yeah. You would think maybe there's something else at play.
I'm rooting for everybody black, everybody African, and I'm hoping things do work out. And this is actually, you know, going into the 2020s, these coups are going to really be very fruitful for the people of their countries. And, you know, if the West has to take some shots in the process, so be it. Look at me agreeing with you.
I know.
What's happening here?
I don't know.
I kind of just let you have this one because I know this is your bag.
I have been studying it a lot recently, to be fair. I know. And I'm going to sound like the worst. I'm like, guys, I live in Europe. I'm not anti-European. I don't want people to think that I hate Europe. But I do think that this is like a particularly interesting time in the decolonization of the previously colonized world.
The pedestal.
The pedestal.
The pedestal.
Out of 100.